5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Hi, everybody. I'm Brian Clapp, Director of Content for WorkinSports.com, and this is the Work in Sports Podcast. I've realized this week as I started to assemble this episode that if I worked in real estate, I would probably spend a lot of my day admiring other people's homes on the market. I could see myself coming home wanting to buy a new, different house each week. Honey, I'm home. Guess what I saw today? This awesome four-bedroom house in the perfect neighborhood with a pool. You're going to love it. And of course, my wife would laugh at me, tell me I'm nuts, and then I'd go on with my day. Well, you have to understand, now in my role with WorkinSports.com, you know what I see all day long? It's not houses, it's sports jobs. You know who I talk to all day long? Cool people in sports with fun jobs. Now, my bosses are listening, so I'm here to convince them that I am not constantly using our job board in order to admire other people's openings. But I do envision certain roles and think to myself, man, that would have been pretty cool if I had only taken that path. Take today's guest, for example, Scott Rego, head equipment manager for the Philadelphia 76ers. For the last 32 years, Scott has worked with the Sixers in various roles. He's built relationships with the players, become a trusted advocate of the coaching staff, been instrumental in orchestrating travel, practices, game prep, team needs, and more. He's on the road with the players. He's on the court pregame, postgame, during the game. It's really cool. What a cool experience in your work life. Scott goes ultra deep explaining his role, his responsibilities, and what he loves about his job in this interview. And he also talks about what he doesn't like, because that's a reality of every job too. It's not all perfect, right? And I have to say, after listening to Scott, there's a lot to love and admire about what he has accomplished. So let's get to it. Here's Scott Rego, head equipment manager for the Philadelphia 76ers. Hey, Scott, how's it going today?
Going great, Brian.
It's a beautiful sunny day in Philadelphia, and it is you're in the off season, so this has to be a good time for you to kind of recharge a little bit. What are your plans for the off season right now?
Right now, we're getting ready for pre-draft. The college kids will start coming in by invitation. The draft is only a few weeks away. Personally, for me, I'll just kind of reconnect with my wife, my 13-month-old son, and we get to bond a lot more right now, and that's really, really cool.
Yeah.
And we'll be at the Jersey Shore for most of the summer.
Can't beat that. So let's start at the beginning a little bit here. For the last 32 years, you've been with the Sixers as part of the equipment staff. I noticed from your bio, you actually started with the team while you were in high school. How did that opportunity come about?
So, a woman that worked with my mother, this is all more about not what you know, who you know,
yeah.
Obviously coming from high school. A woman that worked with my mother, her daughter at the time was the director of promotions, and the office was probably about 20 people, and that was every job. Now the office is like over 100 people. But she was running a promotion that she did not have any help from the office because it was a game day. And it was rolling up life-size posters of Charles Barkley. So during the conversation, she's just with her mother. She's just telling her that, well, my mother and this woman's mother are really good friends. And so, of course, she relates the conversation to my mother. My mother says, I think my son's off of school that day. You want me to see if he'd like to go in and help her out? Would she want to use him? And so she calls her daughter back and she says, tell him I'll give him $30 and tickets to the game. He can bring a friend if he wants.
Oh, that's great.
And I showed up. I spent all morning and afternoon long rolling up life-size posters of Charles Barkley with a handful of other people that were rounded up. Brought a friend. We gave them out to the fans as they came in. And when halftime came, we went home. And so when she had another promotion, she's like, I want him back. I like how he works, talking about me. And that was kind of got my foot in the door.
So it kind of became a continual thing after that. They kept asking you back in, and you just kept showing up and working hard, and that it kind of turned into something from there.
Yeah, the person that's now the director of basketball administration. The following season, he was the equipment manager. It was his first year. based on her recommendation, as I said earlier, the office was so small, everyone knew everyone.
Okay.
And she said, I have this really hardworking kid in high school. He'd be great on your game night staff. I called them game night staff or game night assistants. Back then, they were referred to as ball boys. So all I do is I get a phone call, and she says, hey, call this guy up. He may offer you a job. I'm some wide-eyed high school kid, doesn't know anything from anything, and I'm thinking, I'm going to get a job with the Sixers. I'm going to be making a lot of money. I'm going to go right from school to work. And and when he calls me up and says, well, we'd like for you to be a ball boy, it just wasn't what I was expecting. I said, I guess so. And the conversation did not go well from there. I almost did not do it for that. I almost went back to work for her. On opening night that year, they had a shortage of locker room kids, ball boys. And they knew I was upstairs helping her out with a promotion. And they're like, hey, we really need you downstairs. And cornered me into saying I would do it for the season. And that was it.
That sounds like a dream come true. Are you kidding me? Like, I remember going to Celtics. So I grew up in Boston. I remember going to Celtics. Yeah, sorry about that. I remember going to Celtics games as a kid. And, you know, I remember the kids out there that were like passing the ball to Larry Bird to help him just with a shot every game, and thinking that was the coolest job in the world. And you got to do that like for an entire season. That's incredible.
I got to do it. It was a surreal experience at first because they were so short-handed.
Yeah.
And I was just thrown to the fire, got dressed in the little uniform they give you, and I went out to sit underneath the net. The only thing I knew from watching the kids during the game was to go wipe up the lane during timeout. So I did that only because I've seen them do it before. But the funny story is, during the game, we played the Clippers, Malik Benjamin falls. And I'm supposed to go out and wipe this wet spot on the floor. I can't see it. There's this big 7-foot streak on the floor. And the ref stops the game, brings me out. I give the shrug of his shoulders. Benjamin grabs the towel, wipes the floor up, and I get the old Bronx cheer from the Philly fans. I did not want to come back after that.
That's great.
Come back, there's going to be more kids, and you'll be okay after that.
That's hilarious. So now you're in high school, you go to college, you're working the Sixers home games as a team attendant. At what point did you kind of figure out, all right, the next logical step for me, and this interests me, into going into equipment management? Like, how did you make that transition?
I always liked just being around, and I even tried to help out with odd jobs over the summer with the team. They would have summer league, they'd work a summer league camp. I would always just kind of be in the mix, and I really liked the guys in the equipment department at that time who I was working for, and I kind of liked being around them, too. Back then, once you turned 21, it was, hey, thanks for being a ball boy. Don't think there's anything for you. You know, normally 21 was the age limit, and then we're going back into, like, the 90s here, so... things obviously have changed, but I was going into my last year as a ball boy, and one of the game night guys, who was like the third equipment manager, if you will, didn't travel, but really helped out on game night. He was going to take a full-time job with more responsibility, and he wasn't going to be around, and recommended that I replace it.
Okay.
So once I started getting more into the mix, getting my hands in the mix, the players are really getting to know me. The administration was really getting to know me. It was something that I just felt, wow, this is pretty cool. I like it. And as a couple of years went on, I was promoted to the assistant equipment manager. I had a full-time job getting benefits, and I was having the time of my life. So
was that while you were in college, or was that afterwards?
It was after college when I was the assistant equipment manager, but I was always with the team. I worked other part-time jobs. You know, I was considered part-time with them for the first 6 years, I would say. And so it took me, 6 years of working game nights, working summertime promotions, and just getting paid by the hour. When Comcast bought the team, a Pat Croce came in, Pat made me the assistant equipment manager right away.
So how much did your responsibilities change? Obviously, you go from being a ball boy or helping out in promotions or doing other little part-time jobs, and then you go full-time and you're the assistant equipment manager. How did that role change for you? What were the major responsibilities you had back then?
I think the major responsibility was making sure the equipment manager at Alan Lumpkin at the time had everything he needed to do his job, so he could kind of oversee. He was starting to travel more because back then not every equipment manager traveled. So as his role expanded, my role expanded. My responsibilities were, okay, you're coming off the road. I'm going to help you get the laundry done for the uniforms. I'm going to help pack the uniforms for the road. I'm attending every practice now. This is my job. I'm not hanging out and then going to the game. You know, I'm getting up and going to work. If it's practice, if it's, you know, a game, if it's something else that's needed somewhere, or running pickup jerseys where they're getting made at, we sign a new player, make a trade, organizing the equipment room, keeping inventory, you know, all of that kind of really helped me develop the way I wanted to do the job today.
That makes sense. So what was it like if you're a young guy, you've been around the team for a lot of years, how important was it for you to build relationships and trust with the players themselves? I mean, was that an important part of the job? Was it more of a don't be heard, you know, be seen but don't be heard kind of role where you just kind of faded into the background?
It's a little bit of both. At the time I was so young, I wasn't really thinking about building relationships. They just kind of happened.
Okay.
It's a player's league, and it always has been. So if you gain their trust, you know, and you work hard and you keep your head down and your mouth shut, not much bad is really going to happen to you.
Yep.
And that's basically what I always try to do, is just go forward, keep my eyes forward, my one foot in front of the other. Don't look back, keep your mouth shut, do your job, and go home. And some hours are longer, some days are longer than others, and you're doing your job a lot longer than other people are some days, but that's all part of the game. You know what you're signing up for when you sign up for it.
When you were the assistant equipment manager and there was a head of manager above you, you mentioned his name earlier. I'm sorry, I forgot. But was he like a mentor to you? And if so, what kind of advice did he give you? How did he help you become the person you want to be in this role?
Oh, he definitely was. There's a few older guys. The equipment manager before him, named Jeff Millman, no longer around. He was a mentor to both of us. And he would always come back on game nights and just hang out because he loved the atmosphere so much. And but Alan Lumpkin was definitely a mentor to me. I observed more than anything, and he would bounce ideas off of me, especially when I was his assistant. I was a good sounding board for him.
Okay.
And kind of just, it was really good to know that he asked my opinion, he valued my opinion. And he didn't just do the job and say, hey, I need you to do this, and that's it. I'm more observed, and when I was asked, I would answer. And that's kind of how I went about my business. But we talked a lot, and you would just pick up a lot of things in conversation.
So at what point did you start traveling with the team? That's a huge commitment, I would think, to be on the road for an 82-game season. Your home games, you're on the road. At what point did you start traveling the team, and was that kind of a fun change for you, or was that a grind, or is that a grind?
It's definitely a grind now. When you first do it, it's eye-opening, it's fun, it's exciting, and then next thing you know, you're missing holidays and weekends and family events and you know, you're doing your job, and that's part of it. I started traveling. Larry Brown was the coach, and it might have been his second year with the team. He always wanted everyone to travel. He liked to have everyone around and travel and just be part of the team, because if you're there at practice every day, you're with the players, you're in the locker room, you're with the coaches, you're part of the team as far as he was concerned. But I guess because of budget reasons or the team didn't foresee me traveling a whole lot, Larry was, excuse me, the president of basketball operations, I think, at the time,
yeah,
as well as the head coach. So he would always say, hey, you coming on this trip? No, I'm not going, coach. So One day he just had enough of me saying I'm not going. I was only going on long trips. He turned to my boss, and I'll clean up the language. He basically said, from now on, he's on the road, and if anyone has a problem with it, you can tell them to come see me.
I can imagine that, yeah.
My boss turned to me and goes, did you hear that? I said, I heard it.
Pack your bags. Yeah, pack your bags. You're on the road.
We were leaving for a trip that day. It might have even been a one gamer. But so I believe I was the first assistant equipment manager to travel full time in the NBA.
Oh, that's crazy. That's pretty cool. So you said a second ago that you learned a lot by observing, you know, paying attention to what was going on around you. Now that you're on the road and you're going to other stadiums and you're seeing how other operations work, did you keep that same attitude of just kind of watching how other teams did things and seeing how you might be able to learn and pick up different things along the way?
Oh, absolutely. They always say good comedians steal from other comedians, right?
Right, so. Exactly.
If I see an idea that I like that someone else does, I'll ask them about it. I'll ask the equipment guys are a fraternity anyway. We're like a brotherhood, and we want to help each other out wherever and whenever we can. So if I see an idea that I didn't have or they're doing something that I like, I'll definitely ask them about it. I'll bring it up to my to my superiors here with the Sixers and see if it's something we can do or can't do, or just put that idea in their head and say, hey, I saw this, I like it. It's something that we can do, we should look into it. And so absolutely, why not?
Yeah, of course.
If it benefits the team, then, you know, that's basically the reason why we do this. To help benefit the team, you don't want the players to worry about anything but basketball when they arrive.
Yep, that makes sense. So for the last 19 years, you've been the head equipment manager. I imagine the challenges are much different now. Rather than being the person that helps out the head as the assistant, you're the head. You're the big guy. You're the top dog. What are the hardest parts of your role now? And are there certain parts that you really look forward to as often as you can?
Wow. I think to the hardest, it's not hard. I would call it the fun part is always trying to reinvent yourself.
Okay.
Don't worry, because you've been in a place for a long time. You've been in a position for a long time. I don't ever want anyone to think I'm set in my ways. So people have that perception of others. I try to always find new things, even if it's just new products to bring in. The challenging thing for everyone this past year was switching from Adidas to Nike. And there's a whole new way of doing things as far as uniforms go. I'm sure you've seen teams wearing all kinds of colors in all kinds of arenas.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So keeping on top of the home team chooses the color and scripting the uniform, it's been challenging, I think, to almost all of us, just to stay on top of. I don't think anyone's bringing the wrong uniform on the wrong day, but you better make sure you have everything else ready for the players as far as the color scheme. So we could be playing in blue at home one night and wear red the next night on the road. Well, we're wearing the same loops, the undergarments on the road with the red uniforms as we are with the blue, minus the socks.
Okay.
So it's just making sure whatever we wore in Philly travels to the next city and getting that clean and ready to go for the game. Just a few twists here and there. But
yeah.
I think it's, every team has a budget. You got to stay within budget. You want to make sure everyone has enough items to wear. You're not just taking care of the player. The equipment manager is taking care of the whole operation staff from top to bottom. People that travel, you want to make sure they have enough stuff to wear. I look at it, we're wearing the gear for a good part of 8 months of the year.
Yeah.
But you have to make sure things are mixed up, colors are mixed up, things look fresh, and you just kind of have to keep your eye on the style changes. I remember when, if you look at old video of Allen Iverson, he's wearing a sleeveless t-shirt and the armhole for the bottom of the sleeve is down to his midsection because guys like things baggy back then.
Yep.
Now guys wear items that are, you know, really, really tight fitting and slim fit. And changing with that attitude at those times and the way they want to wear things, the way they want to look with their style, you just have to stay on top of it. I don't know if that answered your question.
No, it totally does. I actually, I think you pivoted nicely into the Nike and Adidas conversation, because that was a curiosity as well of how much that changed things for you. I would imagine then that's where you kind of rely on that fraternal brotherhood of, in a way, of the other equipment managers too, is having communication with the teams you're headed up against to know, you know, make sure you're all aligned on who's wearing what and how this is all going to work together. I would imagine, right?
It was a really, really big challenge, because everyone is starting from zero, though. So you basically think of a whole storage room and it's now empty, and you have to fill the shelves
right
with product. So where are you going to go heavy at? Where are you going to go low at? Where are you going to ride it into the middle? Where are you going to draw the line as far as how much you're going to spend? But you have to, again, as I said earlier, you want to change up looks. You want to give options. You want to give colorways out. You want to stay fresh. You're staying fresh with the swoosh. And everyone was really looking forward to the change, because especially the coaches, they love Nike product.
Okay.
So, yes, you're talking to your brothers because you want to know, what did you order? What did you order that I didn't order? Even though Nike didn't give you a lot to choose from the first year, which was good, you also had to find ways to think outside the box.
Right.
I found ways to order from, let's say, Nike Golf, and then have our branding department go over the color scheme and logos instead of getting stuff brought in from Nike pre-logoed. If you have a staff that likes really big logos, then you're in good shape. If you have a staff that likes small logos on shirts, then you have to go a different route.
So you have to get pretty creative. I mean, it sounds like, I mean, what you're saying in this, and I think it's interesting too, because from the outside, somebody looking at an equipment manager job, it sounds very tactical. Like you have certain things you have to do throughout the day, checklist almost. And yet you're saying that there's a lot of strategy that goes into it, and a lot of creativity and budgeting and a lot of things that go into it to kind of be proactive and think ahead and know what's coming up next, which I think sounds like a pretty interesting part of the job.
Oh, absolutely. It's, you know, you have your daily tasks that get kind of mundane, making sure everyone has towels and clean uniforms and all that stuff. But once you peel back the onion a few layers, there are a lot of things that equipment managers do in their job that people make a career out of doing one of the things that we do, such as forecasting. We put our Nike order in November of the year before for the following season.
Whoa, that's way in advance.
So I don't know who's going to be on the team. I don't know who's going to be on the staff. When we add people, we just had an assistant coach get a head coaching job in Atlanta, and we have to fill a role with someone else. And I don't know what that person's size is going to be.
Right.
We constantly have players that move due to free agency and trades. You have players that come in mid-season, and you have ordered this stuff 12 months in advance. The forecasting part is something I try to pride myself on, because when I see the shelves close to bare at the end of the season, then I know I really did not waste a lot of the owner's money.
That's great. No, that makes perfect sense. So you've been around for a long time, and I don't want you to give any specifics about any specific players, but how much you talked about clothes and culture and things of that nature. How much has it changed, just your relationship with the players? How different are they? Are they more guard? I always envision, and maybe this is my just outsider's view, but I kind of envision in this age of social media that they're probably more protective now than they may have been back in the 80s or 90s. Is that accurate, or am I off base?
Yeah, no, I don't want to say they're guarded with me. Like, when you're in that locker room, you're in a circle of trust. I think when my relationship turned from being someone that was younger to then it morphed into someone that was almost the same age as the players. So certain times I know that as soon as I was getting to my room, I was getting a phone call, where are we going to dinner, from certain guys.
Right.
Now I'm 20 years older than these guys coming in. They call me Uncle Scotty or Uncle Block. So I'm more of a more of a guy that could spin the yarn about stories about Iverson and guys that they watched when they were growing up because I've been around them. It's more of a respect thing, I would say, towards me from them. And of course, they have my respect for what they do.
Do the current players ask a lot about like guys like Barkley and Iverson and some of the Dikembe Mutombo and some of the other Sixers kind of stars of past that that you probably know a little bit more about? Do they ask you about those guys?
Some guys will. Some guys will. You know, we'd be in a situation and they say, "Hey, what would have Allen done here?" Not an X and O situation, just something lighthearted or whatever.
That's cool.
Where they would say, you've been around, you know, what would this guy have done? And I think it's just they want to hear a story or two.
Yeah.
And you get their attention. And with me, it's always some type of funny anecdote. So, they ask, but it's only a select few.
Yeah, that's cool. So we have this private Facebook group, and we have fans of this show that are in there. And before each interview, I ask them if they have any questions they'd like me to ask. So this one comes from a fan of the show. His name's Vincent Wong, he's in college at Florida State, and he really wants to be an equipment manager someday. Vincent wanted to know what advice you would give someone who wants to start building their career in equipment management.
I'm laughing because I always start off with "Don't do it." But
I hope Vincent didn't hear that part.
When I've helped students with reports and papers or projects, if they reached out to me, I am on LinkedIn only for that reason.
Yeah.
And if you see my page, most of the people I'm connected to are equipment managers all over the world. The first thing I say is, "Don't do it. Find something else." But no, I think the main thing to do is you have to find a way to get within an organization. If you're trying to get into pro sports, you may have to intern in the marketing department or the sales department. I hate to be cliche to get your foot in the door, but that's basically what I did. I got my foot in the door. I did not know that this was going to be my path. I went to school for broadcast journalism. I always thought I could probably be an agent one day. I would have loved to have coached, but this is the path that I've been on. And hopefully I think I would have established myself as someone that's pretty done a pretty good job in this industry. But I would say make sure you're organized. Be nice to everyone. Get to know everyone. Get to know every job in an organization inside and out. You're going to have to work with every person in the organization at some point. Crossing departments, you're not just going to be in basketball.
That's an interesting point. Go ahead.
Well, I would just say once you're in and you show that you have a work ethic and you're going to work hard, you can try to, you know, navigate the waters once you're inside.
It's interesting because it's not like there's a college degree for equipment management. You know, it's not like you can set your sights on this and get the right exact training. It seems like so much of the knowledge you need for your job comes from on the job, right? You've kind of learned as you've gone. And I'd imagine a lot of the other equipment managers in every sport across has kind of felt the same way, would you think? Or do you feel like there's a training ground for it?
Well, experience is definitely the best teacher. Most guys in the league have started out as ball boys.
Okay.
And all of a sudden became equipment managers because they stuck with it somehow, some way. Other guys may have had other paths that led them to the team. I don't think, and I don't want to say don't quote me on this, but I'm not sure if I'm correct or not in saying this. When I went to college and I graduated with just a 4-year degree, I don't believe sports management was a course that could have been taken back in the early 90s.
No, it wasn't. When I was in the school in the early 90s as well, and it was not. So I agree with you.
So, and I don't know what that curriculum involves now. I would say get involved with your college equipment department.
Right.
And just get that training. You may be working a sport that's not interested to you, but if you get the training and it's all about the job, it looks good on a resume.
Yeah, it sure does. Vincent had another question. He said he's at Florida State, and he said he got to meet the head equipment guy there, and he asked him what time of year is the busiest for him, and he said it's actually the summer in the off season, because he works primarily football, I guess. Is that the same? Do you have a certain season of the year that is the busiest for you in the NBA?
The month of September.
Okay, is that planning?
Everything is I'm going back to the Adidas days too, but everything with Nike now comes in around mid-August, but the month of September is you're still unpacking boxes. You're unpacking over 300 to 500 boxes that come in from Nike. So you're unpacking boxes, you're getting product ready, distributed to the team, coming for training camp. But also the players, especially teams that have their own facility, the players start coming in after Labor Day just to get themselves in a little bit of shape to get ready for.
Right.
So it's almost like, even though it's not official, that because they're there and they're there all the time, that training camp starts way early.
Yeah.
The players are just there. They're getting themselves in shape. They're, you know, on the treadmills. They're doing whatever they're doing. But they're coming in and they want their gear and they want to be ready. You know, you're there to service them. That's another part of the job that the equipment managers have. You're part of the service industry. I call it hospitality and service. Just like when you go to a hotel, you have people there to wait on you. That's what we do. We're there to, you know, serve the players and take care of their, you know, their needs, their non-medical needs.
Sounds like Christmas in September. You know, you get all these boxes from Nike with fun stuff in them.
It's boxes from Nike. It's luggage. It's everything that you are giving out to the guys. I try to, you know, everyone tries to give the players a nice care package at the start of training camp.
Oh,
this is your stuff that you're going to wear for as long as you're here this season.
That's cool.
And last year until the season ends. So it's, you're going over item by item for each guy, each coach, each management person.
That's really
cool. The month of September is the busiest time. It's the prep. Everything is about preparation.
Yep. And the more you put into the preparation, the easier it makes it throughout the season. So we have another fan, Dylan Burson, yes, wanted to know, with such a long season, and we talked about this just a little bit, being on the grind, but with such a long season and day-to-day grind, how do you maintain your stamina and embrace the busy schedule?
Well, I would like to say that I work out every day, but I stopped working out 2 years ago.
That used to be your way?
I should get back on the Stairmaster or the elliptical or something. Really, it's rest, it's recovery, it's diet, it's just making sure you carve out time for yourself, carve out time for your family, and you have to find a way for a healthy balance, even though the hours, the scales of the is not tipped in your favor. But any type of way you can find a healthy balance is great. I have a great assistant. He helps keep me fresh because he does not travel.
Okay.
So when I come back from late night trips and, you know, the laundry needs to be done, the duties need to start out, he has the practice site ready for the players to go when they come back. He'll get things ready for me for when we come off the road. And he helps provide me with that healthy balance.
It's a team effort.
As much as they get it to scale.
Yeah. So you referenced it a little bit earlier. We'll finish up with this because I know you got a busy day ahead of you.
Sure.
You referenced earlier about how you work with other teams within the organization, like marketing and sales and community relations. How does that work? How do you guys work together, and how important it was for you to build relationships across and outside of just the team itself?
It happens a lot. It's almost every day because, especially when you go for the season, that's when the hype videos are done that you see in arena.
Okay.
That's when commercials are done. That's when a lot of things that are done through the marketing department. So what they do is they have these meetings, they hash out a plan, and okay, here's how we want the guys to look. Well, who has the stuff that they need for the guys to look a certain way? The equipment manager. So they have to involve me somehow, some way, in a timely fashion, especially when items may be locked up at the arena and we have any other practice site somewhere else. So you work with the marketing department a lot. The scripting of uniforms, the marketing department has a big say in that, and we will work together. Mostly they'll let me know about how the scripting will work, but if there's an idea or a change that I may want to give my two cents on, they definitely do listen. The branding department, whenever I order blank polos or blank t-shirts that need a logo on it, it goes to the branding department. They tell me how they think this item should look, so you wear uniform throughout an organization, and then I go execute their vision. Community relations, they have programs all over the place, especially when it's around Martin Luther King Day and Black History Month, and I am ordering shirts that the players will wear on court. They may need some for their programs, so they'll let me know the amounts and sizes they need so that order can be piggybacked off of mine. And you're always helping out community relations. When they have autograph signings, I try to save sneakers that the players do not want anymore, and I will get the relations director, and they will show up in front of the player at his autograph signing, and they can use those as part of their items in the closet that they need to give to a charity or something.
That's great. It's really interesting to hear how in depth your job is, that it's not just a simple tactical, that you have so many parts of your job, like we said, about budgeting and organizing and working cross functionally, that I'm sure makes it an incredibly challenging role. And thank you, Scott, for letting us in a little bit and understanding a little bit more about your day to day and the challenges you face and just your experience in the NBA, I think is so cool. And I know our audience will really love hearing from you. So thank you so much for your time, Scott.
I really appreciate you having me on. It was a blast. I'd be happy to answer any other questions pertaining to the job if you need me. You know how to get a hold of me.
You got it, Scott. Thanks, man. Here's what I love from this interview, a few key takeaways. When Scott said his big advice to people was, don't do it, I think he's playing around because that's his personality. I think he really loves his job and the community of it. When he talked about the players calling him Uncle Scott, I think he loves every minute of that. Sure, it's a grind. There are long days. There are high expectations. You're on the road. You're on planes. You're in hotel rooms. But I don't know. I got the vibe. He enjoys being associated with a team that he loves and an organization he respects. One other thing, Scott is a smart guy. I think if he was just doing players' laundry year after year, he'd be bored. I loved hearing him talk about the organization, the forecasting, anticipating player needs, budgeting, and working cross-functionally with marketing, sales, and branding. What a cool world that Scott gave us a window into. Big thanks, Scott. That's going to do it for this week's show. If you like what we were doing, please subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen and give us a rating and a review. And finally, join our private Facebook group by searching for the Work in Sports podcast on Facebook. All you have to do is answer three easy questions and you are in. The benefits to you are huge. Many of our expert guests are in the group, sharing their knowledge, answering questions, and there are tons of sports career-minded folks just like you, looking to break in, sharing advice and experiences. It's a great group. I think you'll like it. Join in. It's free. All you have to do is answer a few questions and you're in. So that's it for now, folks. Thanks to Scott Rego again, and I'll see you on Friday. Boom shakalaka.